Digital content on WAER is supported by California Closets of Syracuse, creating custom storage solutions for all areas of the home, as well as in professional offices and commercial spaces. Learn more at californiaclosets.com or by visiting their DeWitt showroom.
Facing breast cancer means different things to different people. Welcome to Syracuse Speaks. I'm Chris Bolt.
And I'm Katie Zolkowski. Syracuse University television, radio, and film professor Tula Goenka started examining the perspectives of people gripped by breast cancer in her photo exhibit, Look Now. It showed survivors, clothed and nude, sharing their images after treatment or mastectomy and their stories.
But stories behind breast cancer expand from survivors, patients, and victims to caregivers, doctors that provide treatment, and advocates. Goenka, along with Nancy Keefe Rhodes and Kyle Bass, created Titbits, Breast Cancer Stories, to have people tell some of the many tales each faced while facing breast cancer. What follows are excerpts of a live stage production that was presented last month, in most cases, hearing from the very people affected by the disease.
Just that word.
Cancer.
I'll tell anybody about my breast cancer.
I'm 43 years old, and I don't want to die.
It wasn't my choice to specialize in breast cancer treatment.
I got my third breast cancer diagnosis in 2013.
Breast reconstruction is a woman's right if she wants it.
Stupid, dumb breast cancer.
I really don't think this is my story to tell.
Just that word, cancer. Now I hear it left and right, but then I didn't hear much of it. No one in my family had it. In 2006, I couldn't find any breast cancer support groups, none. My support group was my community and my friends. Of course, my mother-in-law came from India. My husband, Pramod, is a very private person. He doesn't want to share anything with anybody. He said,
"Oh, we can handle stuff."
I said, no, this is bigger than anything in the past. I had had gallbladder surgery earlier. Recovery took 6-8 weeks. Nobody even knew about it. We need to reach out to people. I think that's the best thing we did. My friends and community made me stronger. My name is Anju Varshney.
I'll tell anybody about my breast cancer. People say,
Why tell your business?
Somebody could be going through the same thing. Cancer is like the common cold. I'll strike up a conversation on the bus. Someone says,
"You know, my mother."
Perfect example. I was telling my life insurance agent how I got my policy. He says,
"Really? My sister's dying of breast cancer right now."
I go, "Oh my God, I'm so sorry. What can I do to help you? How are you feeling?" If we had not had this conversation, he wouldn't have told me how he felt about his sister. None of his insurance clients ever asked him.
What can I do for you?
Cancer was supposed to happen to me. My name is Deirdre Bordes, better known as Dee Dee.
I am a 43-year-old, and I do not want to die. I can never, ever ring a bell that says I am in remission. I won't have that privilege. I can be a NED, no evidence of disease, but I will still have cancer for the rest of my life. Everyone talks about breast cancer awareness, but nobody talks about metastatic or stage 4. I talk about it every chance I get, and I will talk about it every chance I can. I was in Pittsburgh this past summer seeing Garth Brooks, my number one bucket list. My 13-year-old daughter, Presley, and I have our own special bucket list of things that we want to do together before it's too late. She knows I'm terminally ill, but she knows I'm not going anywhere anytime soon. Slowly checking things off our list one by one, my name is Colleen Anderson.
To be perfectly frank, it wasn't my first choice to specialize in breast cancer treatment. I fell into it. As medical students, we're all enamored with the science of hematology and acute illnesses like leukemia. We don't get as much exposure to outpatient situations. When the chair of medicine at Upstate gave up his large breast cancer practice, I was the only female on staff in oncology. My boss came to me.
I think you'd be a good fit for breast cancer.
Leading breast cancer surgeon Dr. Patricia Newman took me under her wing. She was very helpful in letting her patients know I was okay. She made sure I did everything right. One of my first breast cancer patients was a very prominent woman in town. She was truly the matriarch of that family. Once I took care of her, I got a reputation for being reliable. My practice grew and grew. That was 30 years ago. My name is Sheila Lemke.
When I got my third breast cancer diagnosis in 2013, I was confident because I had already beaten it twice, once in 97 and again in 2010. When I got my first diagnosis, I saw it for 2 whole days. I was absolutely aware of the gifts that breast cancer had brought to my life. I knew that if I remained open, more gifts would come. This last time, radiation wasn't possible because I had already had it. I wasn't going to put chemicals in my body with chemo. Mastectomy was my only option. I met with a plastic surgeon for reconstruction. I did not have a double mastectomy because I needed a placeholder for my swimsuit. I'm a very active woman. I wasn't going to wear any prosthesis. It would have popped out, fallen on the gym floor 100 times. And I need one breast to operate as a lesbian, don't I? My name is Barbara Genton.
Breast reconstruction is a woman's right if she wants it. Historically, women weren't necessarily given the option. My aunt had breast cancer 60 years ago. The minute she got diagnosed, my father and my uncle, they decided for her.
You're getting a mastectomy.
She got a radical mastectomy, muscle, the whole 9 yards. To the day she died, she was angry about that. I don't think I'm unusually sensitive to women. I think I'm sensitive to everybody. I wear my emotions on my sleeve and I open up very easily. Taking care of people is a privilege. I want to be sensitive to what they're going through. To me, healing means taking care of the entire patient, not just the surgery or the patient even, but knowing the impact on the entire family. I am Anthony DeBoney.
Stupid, dumb breast cancer. When we told our 4 sons about my cancer diagnosis, my oldest, Ben, completely lost it. He was 13 at the time. He pushed his plate away, said we lied to him originally. We said it was nothing. Was I going to die? He breastfed from me. So was he going to get breast cancer too? All these questions rolled off of him. He wrote about it because the anger he was having was eating him alive. Marie Claire magazine published his essay in 2014. He wrote,
"It didn't seem like my mom there. She seemed like an imposter. She's usually loud and crazy, but this person was quiet and tired. She wasn't even joking with me. That's what scared me the most. I wanted to hug her, but I was scared she was going to break. Plus, she had all those disgusting drains. She looked so small. I know she is small, but this was a different kind of small. Almost like as if she stood up, she wouldn't work right."
Ben hated the hospital. He called it a prison for sick people. I am Anne Marie Gino Otis.
I don't really think this is my story to tell. It's Judy Meehan's story. I was her partner and caregiver. She was so eloquent. I want her words to speak. Her 3 years of blogging with humor, anger, music, poetry, art. I was just looking at her journals, more from the second time, the recurrence. The first time she had the mastectomy, it took her years to recover from brutal chemotherapy. But compared to when it came back, the first time seems rosy. Our daughter Zoe would also be particularly good at talking about Judy's cancer. She's just so wonderfully expressive and empathic. I'm not a very empathic person. I was physically present, but it's very hard for me to express certain things. Judy wrote,
Everything's fine
Everything's fine here going through May.
So this is it.
So this is
June 25th. Years.
Years.
Dr. Scalzo always talking in years, not weeks.
Not weeks.
That's what we thought.
That's what we thought.
Weeks or months,
weeks
but
or
years.
Months, but years.
He said, I would be around to see Jonah and Zoe graduate
college. And she did. I am Sam Gruber.
Years ago, I left a five-year relationship because he couldn't handle my cancer any longer. My daughter Presley and I moved back home to Clinton with my parents. I am a mother, a daughter, a sister, a friend. Now I realize not only did my family support me, the entire town did. They all welcomed me back with open arms. I met Anne Marie in person last year
at the Look Now exhibition.
We had talked on Facebook, but never met. She gave me a huge hug and said,
I watched your fight and followed everything you did. I feel like I already know you.
I put it all on social media. The pictures of the staples in my head, the mask that they made for me that made me look like Hannibal Lecter for brain radiation. In high school, we all dreamed we'd come home one day and the whole town would love us. It happened for me. God has a plan for us. I always say I am not a religious person, but my grandmother and I went to Mass every day. She always said,
He's helping you through it. Your trials are there for a reason.
She was the most independent woman I have ever met. We had a special bond. She was a single mother who raised four children and baked the best Lebanese bread ever. But there is no cancer anywhere in my family history. I am the first one. I know God gave me this stage four illness so I can be the voice of young people who get cancer. I will be the advocate until the day I die. Because silence equals death.
I'm a retired educator. My birthday is July 4th. I'm one of those firecracker girls. I grew up in Eastwood. My parents would go to church to volunteer after supper. At age 13, I was a camp church counselor. That cemented my desire to become a teacher. Syracuse was a very conservative town then. No symphony, no art museum. After a year of teaching here, I moved to Westchester County, taught fourth grade. I was in New York City every weekend. 4 years later, I missed the cows. Hey, we had an art museum, a symphony. Oh, and I fell in love with someone here. I got a job teaching in Marcellus, stayed for 31 years. The other piece of who I am now is an out lesbian. I wasn't always. Growing up in Syracuse in the 50s, I was always a tomboy. My mother put me in all those dresses and those patent leather shoes. What was that all about? There was no word, no information, no internet. I vividly remember taking the bus downtown to the old Carnegie Library across the street from the now Y, walking up the marble steps. I'm probably 13, 14, 50. I'm going through the stacks of books to find out what was happening within me. I knew I was attracted to women, but I just couldn't find anything. Was I alone?
I'm a mom of four boys, Ben, Sam, Anthony, and Julian. I've been married for 21 unperfect years. I love to cook. I'm a Northside girl. I worked in a funeral home. I'm a caterer, a nanny, a teacher. My husband, Tom, teaches fourth grade. We had our first child in Albany. I needed to be near my family, so Fayetteville and three more boys later, here I am. When I was diagnosed, I let people help me, but not like I should have. I was stoic. I should have rested more. Not letting people help me affected my healing and made them feel helpless. The problem is, in my family, I'm the go-to person.
We need a cake.
We're going to have a party.
Oh, it's Sunday dinner.
Call Anne Marie.
It's just who I am.
Judy was an art historian. We met in graduate school at Columbia. I didn't understand women. I just couldn't express anything. Judy was more experienced. We were married in 87 in Italy, in Rome. We lived in Manhattan. Judy worked for MoMA. I was with the World Monuments Fund till Judy started teaching at SU. I'm an architectural historian, adjunct at SU, father of Jonah and Zoe. I was a husband. I'm not very focused in my life direction, but I try to do no harm. I'm practical. I was very ambitious. I'm not as ambitious anymore. A couple of feet of snow was on the ground when we came up in 93, so there were no surprises. We didn't think we would stay for 25 years. Whenever leaving came up, the trade-off wasn't worth it. Both times Judy was ill, we had a very strong network of friends. Judy also loved making art, more so in the last year of her life, each and every day until she stopped because of pain and fatigue.
I was born in India. My dad worked for UNESCO. Every 3 years, we moved. We lived in Iraq, in Thailand, in France, at the UNESCO headquarters. I have known my husband Pramod since I was 9 years old. He was already teaching at Syracuse University when we got married in 78. It was the middle of winter when I came here, so cold. But I like it now. It's a good place to raise a family, and it's very diverse. I did 2 master's degrees here. I taught Regents Biology and Regents Earth Science in the city schools. Later, I moved to a program called VINTA, Violence is Not the Answer, for kids caught up with weapons who are failing. I loved it. In the beginning, the students were so apprehensive. Then gradually, they came around. I told them every day, girls, you're too young to have kids. Several years later, I ran into a young lady, and she goes,
Miss, do you remember you taught me in the 8th grade? Guess what?
What?
I don't have a child. I finished high school, and I have a job.
After the cancer treatment, I went back to teaching. I wanted to prove to myself that, yes, I can do it. I taught for several years before retiring.
I still haven't forgotten my first patient who died. I know it wasn't my fault. It was the disease, but I still feel awful. Right now, there is no cure for stage 4 breast cancer. Some people need to be very scientific. They want second opinions, make sure they've checked every avenue. For other people, it's the comfort of knowing they're important to their doctor. I have many patients, but all my patients have just one oncologist. They have one person in this battle with them. I try to give hope. Some people see that as lying. Every new patient I meet, I really want to get to know who that patient is. One of my more heartbreaking stories, Dawn wouldn't care if I use her name. She and her family were very public with her battle. She was this beautifully striking drug rep who was nothing but upbeat. Her attitude was,
I have breast cancer. I'll take care of it. It's not a big deal.
She came with her husband. She had a son, 1 or 2 years old. She had early breast cancer. Took the chemo like a pro. Didn't want it to affect her life in any way. Still worked. Her mother had it. Her sister got it. Maybe 5 years later, she came in with rib pain, a recurrence. She never flinched. One day, I finally had to say, you know, Dawn, I don't have anything more. She said,
I knew we would have this conversation. I'm not afraid, and I'm ready.
Her son was about 7 then. That broke my heart.
When 2020 arrives, WAER's importance in keeping you well informed will be greater than ever. Thank you to everyone who gave to WAER during our December campaign. You are the public in public radio. You'll count on WAER in 2020, and WAER will be here to serve you. What sustains the resources for WAER is listener support. If you haven't made a contribution yet to WAER in 2019, give today at waer.org.
Welcome back to Syracuse Speaks as we present excerpts of Tidbits, Breast Cancer Stories. I'm Katie Zolkowski. The next excerpts from the live production continue to show how people are affected by cancer diagnoses and treatment and the impacts on surrounding family and life.
Even back in my 20s, I had mammograms. I was always finding lumps. They didn't scare me. I maybe stopped drinking caffeine for a little while. But in 2012, I was lying in bed one Saturday morning, and I rolled over on my arm, and I felt something in my breast. I pressed down on the lump, and black discharge came straight out of my nipple. I screamed. My husband came running down the stairs. "I found a lump," I said. He literally rolled his eyes at me. You see, I scream a lot. He pressed it, and black discharge came out. He used very colorful language. That day, I happened to be volunteering for a breast cancer organization. Just knowing something was wrong with my breast made me panicky. I spent the day registering survivor after survivor, bald person after bald person, and I kept going into the bathroom to check. Yep, still there. I had a mammogram on Monday, black discharge all over the machine. The tech literally wiped it down, and she said,
There's nothing there. Let's do a sonogram.
She did the sonogram and said, "Hold on.
I feel the lump, but I don't see anything."
She told me to check with my doctor in 6 months and checked normal on my sheet. I finally found a doctor who said,
"For peace of mind, let's just take that lump out."
The next week I found out. I think it was my gut. I always knew. But you want so desperately to believe it's nothing. I was 40. Nobody told me.
You're at the prime age to get breast cancer.
My grandmother had it in her 60s. I had to tell my kids I had cancer.
Judy was first diagnosed in 1997. We had two kids, ages 6 and 4. No pain, no lumps, nothing. She had the mastectomy, reconstructive surgery, brutal chemotherapy, then tamoxifen for 5 years. She had chemo brain for a very long time. Basically, they only know how to cut, burn, and poison you. The treatment killed her immune system, a dangerous situation with two little kids. I was clueless. We were very young. Judy's cancer came back 16 years later as a pericardial effusion, May 2013. That's what killed her. She was a couple years from retirement. The kids were in college. We looked forward to reconnecting. It was relentless. Then we were basically looking for good days here and there.
Oh my God, yes. I was diligent about my health. Every year, an appointment at 3:30, right after school ended at 3. Same thing in 2006. The tech did the mammogram. She looked at it and said,
"Oh, everything is fine. We'll see you next year."
The next morning, I got up early for school. My husband was still in bed. I was taking a shower, and there was this huge, hard lump right next to my nipple. I actually ran out naked. I screamed,
Something has happened to me.
But I still went in to teach. At 3:30, I was at the doctor's office again. She said,
"They must have pressed your breasts really hard, so it's a hematoma."
She treated me for a hematoma for 2 weeks, but it got worse. She sent me in for a biopsy. That was Memorial Day weekend. The nipple was hiding the tumor, and the mammogram pushed it out. The mammogram saved my life.
When I watched my mother die from breast cancer, we didn't know what questions to ask. All we knew was, take the lump out and she'll be fine. Not take the breast off, then she'll really be fine. I had one breast taken. Now I wish I'd taken both. The survival rates for African American women are not good. I don't know if it's the treatment or if we're diagnosed too late or something else. Even people who have insurance, they won't go.
It's the fear of finding out something you don't want to know.
If it wasn't for my sister, I probably wouldn't have known. She says,
Dee Dee, you need to go and have a mammogram.
I'm not having a mammogram.
Girl, you need to go.
I don't want to know. If I have it, just let it take me out. But she insisted.
I have three worst moments. First, when it's out of the blue, when I've had to meet with a patient who's a new consult or even a follow-up visit. They've had a test they're completely not expecting. I'd check their blood work, I'd see a little something wrong. I'd have to walk into the room and say, it's gone to your liver. Immediately they'd ask,
Am I going to die?
That's a frightening question. How do you answer that?
Not today.
Sometimes I couldn't sleep the night before. You can't change anything. You're just flattened. Especially when it's a woman having her first baby and she gets breast cancer. Sometimes it hits personally. My stepson's wife was diagnosed when she was 3 months pregnant. The baby is now going to be three.
When I went for the mammogram before the day was over, there was a message on my machine saying, come back. Something didn't look right. And when they told me I had ductal carcinoma in situ, stage zero, I said, you're wasting your time. Why am I here? Zero to me means nothing. They wanted to do a lumpectomy, so I needed to see what they were talking about because I felt nothing.
The second worst thing is the death and dying of it. Each loss hits you so hard. You're taking care of someone for life, not for a week or a month. I remember saying to my best friend, Kara Court, who's a breast cancer surgeon, I just don't know how many more young women I can take through this journey. Women are the heart and soul of the family. You know, they may not seem like the most powerful or important people, but they really are.
Just because you don't feel a lump doesn't mean there's nothing there. When I had the biopsy, they had the x-ray up and they showed me. It was like little sand dots. The surgeon took a little bit out, but the margin wasn't clean. She took some more, and the margin again wasn't clean. That meant the whole breast was full of cancer. I was angry. I did not want to go through what my mother went through. The anger made me determined to get better.
Near the end, a third thing got harder and harder. Overcompensating for the broken healthcare system. It's falling apart. It just crushes your spirit. Emotionally and physically, it's harder to do it. Loss of sleep, just trying to keep up with everything. You're with your family and the phone rings. I have to take this call. People say, well, just get coverage. But that patient doesn't want to talk to someone else when they have a recurrence. They want to talk to me.
Judy and I were reading up on pericardial effusion. We were convinced she'd be dead in a month. We were just distraught. I was trying to take care of her retirement from the university so she could qualify for certain benefits. She wasn't going to get it all they had promised. A wonderful woman there tried to help, but in the meeting with her, it was the first time I really broke down crying, and it was in front of my kids. Then when she died, it was just terrible, terrible. I was in the room. I heard Judy choking. I tried to wake her up. I saw all this blood everywhere. She was breathing very heavily. This went on for many hours. While this is happening, the insurance guy calls. I can see on my phone, it's him. He's supposed to come by for her signature. I'm holding Judy and I have to tell him, it's not a good time. My wife is dying right now. The night before, we basically had a party in the backyard because so many people stopped by. It got quite loud. Forgetting someone upstairs is dying. I go upstairs about 9 o'clock. I say to Judy, it's getting noisy. Should I tell people to leave or to be quiet? And she says,
"No, no, it's okay. I just heard Bennett laugh."
That's Bennett Shaber. He does have a very loud laugh. "Okay, why don't you just go to sleep? I'll come up to bed later." When I went up again, she was asleep. And that was the last conversation we had.
In 2006, there were no Facebook groups. Dr. Lemke was my support. With her, I wept. I wept on her shoulder every time I saw her. I had such long, lovely hair. I asked her, "Am I going to lose my hair during the chemo?"
"Unfortunately, yes."
"I still have some of the other side effects. My fingertips are numb. I've lost my taste for sweets. But I'm not afraid of death anymore. Actually, I didn't even think of death even then. Nobody in my family had cancer. They died of old age or cardiac arrest. Sometimes I feel I've cheated death. I tell my husband, you know, I'm only 13 years old because this is my second life." When they were taking me to surgery, my friend, Dr. Geeta Roy, was with me. I laughed. "Geeta, it looks like the doors have opened up there." She said, "Yes, and we're trying to close them." She said that to me in Hindi, "Upar ke darwaze," the doors of death.
When my mother got cancer, I had just gotten clean in Narcotics Anonymous. I hadn't told her anything because I was the good girl. The last thing she expected was me throwing my life away on drugs in the city. When I was going to rehab, I called her. I said, "Mom, I'm not going to call for a little while. I'm going to rehab."
"What for? I know you smoke marijuana."
Needless to say, that was not what I went for. When I got out of rehab, I told her what I really went for. She was heartbroken because she was proud of me. I no longer was afraid of her judgments, you know. I had just opened up about everything. We finally had this relationship I'd been yearning for so long. Then she found out she had cancer. She had a lumpectomy, but the cancer went to her bones. They couldn't stop it or fix it or slow it down. She was in a lot of pain. I watched her body burning from it. I hadn't moved to Syracuse yet, but I came every month. When she got worse, I would stay 2 to 3 months. She threw up every day, but I couldn't do the vomit. My sister would take care of that. When my mother had diarrhea, I could do that part. I'd say, "Move, I got it." When they told me I had breast cancer, all I remember was my mother not making it. All I thought was, "I'm gonna die." I'm still very paranoid with everything I do and in all my successes. I'm always afraid it's coming back. Every day since my diagnosis, if I sneeze or have a cough too long, I say,
Something's wrong. I fell into a deep depression after my surgery. I contemplated suicide. You hear so much about how people suffer. I didn't want to suffer. I am very big on dying with dignity. The first thing I think when I wake up in the morning, "Okay, you're alive today." Then I walk right into the same wall. I walk sideways. I'm off balance until my meds kick in. I think we need to talk more about the mental impact, a lot more. I know I have PTSD. I know how to control it on my own. Treatment plan for PTSD is day to day. When I'm alone, I overthink everything. I force myself to get up and do something.
A load of laundry.
Or a walk outside.
Or go for a drive.
There are some really nice country roads. I get out of the car and I just scream. That helps me. My Xanax is prescribed up to 4 times a day. I take it twice unless I'm really anxious, usually right before my scans. We call that scansiety.
It happens to all of us.
That's when the PTSD and the depression set in. You're like, okay, you've had the scans. Now you have to wait 4 days for the result. My mom says,
if there's something there, they'll call you.
Well, when it was in my lymph nodes, nobody called. They don't tell you that chemo doesn't break your brain barrier. So my brain was never, ever protected. In March of 2017, one Saturday morning, I woke up and it was like I was looking through a kaleidoscope. The oncologist on call said,
take it easy, drink a lot of fluids. Your labs have been good. If it's still bad on Sunday, give us a call.
On Sunday, they did a CT scan, found the tumor behind my left brain. My neurosurgeon, Dr. Soltz, did an MRI with contrast. My cancer had now traveled to my brain.
You have two tumors, one on each side. We'll pluck them out as we see them.
I had only one chemo treatment left. Now it's metastasized to my brain. The maintenance chemo is only helping me from the chin down. I know this cancer will come back into my head. It's the only place it can get to.
It's human nature that physicians feel like the biggest failure when someone has a recurrence. We fight that by just giving them every treatment there is. Then you'll never feel like a failure. It's more courageous to say, I don't really think that's going to help you. I was one of the first oncologists in Central New York to say, the science doesn't support giving everybody chemotherapy. I always knew the person I was treating, who they were, what they wanted. I was good at talking to people. I was willing to say, I think this treatment is best for you. We have made strides in saving lives. More people are living longer now because drugs once reserved for stage 4 have been moved up to stages 1, 2, and 3. And there are new drugs, but it still doesn't work for everyone. With stage 4 breast cancer, nobody wants to talk about it when it's time to cease treatment. Stopping chemotherapy doesn't mean you're giving up. Most of the time, it made the patients and my relationship stronger. Absolutely, there may have been anger. When you have that conversation, you become part of that person's journey to the end. If you stop that vicious cycle of chemo, you actually open the door for end-of-life relationships to happen. I believe that's very healing.
I think often women, at least the women I've taken care of, don't feel like they have the right to cry or complain, whether they're trying to keep a good face with their family,
their kids,
their husbands, whatever. Most times the husbands are there, but it still makes me sad seeing how many men have run for the hills. I've had many beautiful, smart, talented women whose partners have just checked out. You can just tell by the way the other person is sitting there how committed they are. Sometimes women come in by themselves, and you don't see the husbands until there's a problem. I can tell when a marriage is going to be okay usually, but it tests the relationship. Sometimes the husbands will start piping up. I look at them and say, it's not about you. Tongue in cheek, but I'll say, just let her talk. This is her time.
Digital content on WAER is supported by California Closets of Syracuse, creating custom storage solutions for all areas of the home, as well as in professional offices and commercial spaces. Learn more at californiaclosets.com or by visiting their DeWitt showroom.
Welcome back to Syracuse Speaks. I'm Chris Bolt. People affected by breast cancer, from patient to family member or caregiver to treatment provider or advocate, talk about many ways in which their lives are touched and changed. Not all of those are completely sad or sorrowful, as we hear in these next excerpts from the live performance of Titbits Breast Cancer Stories.
I was
was the first among my friends to get breast cancer. I wasn't the last. Back in 97, I went to a small support group once a month. I needed to hear those stories, needed their camaraderie. We'd go around the circle. Maybe my third session there, I noticed a woman. She had a cap on, bald as she could be. She says to me,
I know you. I went to kindergarten with you. I went to first grade with you. I went all through 12th grade with you. I was your badminton partner at Eastwood High School.
She told me her name. I hadn't seen her since high school graduation. 22 years later, we're still friends. Now that's a gift.
It was 2012. My sons were 4, 6, 10, and 13. We sat them down to tell them I had cancer. My youngest, Julian, said,
stupid, dumb breast cancer.
I have a friend who's a photographer. She said she would document it all for me. I was also blogging so my loud Italian family could be in my business. Then I got a message from someone in Ireland, and I thought, why is this person reading my blog? I realized that it was because my blog is who I am. It's not polished, it's not perfect, there's a lot of spelling mistakes in it, and there's also too many exclamation points. Before I posted my breast cancer photos on the blog, I asked my family, do you guys want to see them? My 10-year-old son, Sam, said,
I don't know if I want to see them.
That's okay, you don't have to. Finally, he changed his mind, and I showed him the pictures. They're graphic. There's nothing pretty or pink about them. There are drains coming out, and they're intense. Sam said,
oh my God, thank God. I thought you had two holes in your chest. I didn't realize you were going to be covered up.
I thought, if he thinks that, how many others have misconceptions about what it looks like under our clothes? I started my organization, Stupid Dumb Breast Cancer. I have more than 18,000 followers now, and I've raised millions for breast cancer research.
I wasn't angry after treatment. I didn't try to bargain. I never said this isn't happening. But I was very depressed, and I knew I needed to get out of that rut. I called the rescue mission and said, I'm recovering from breast cancer, and I want to volunteer. But I don't want a cubicle. I want to be with people, and I can't lift anything heavy.
Perfect. You can come stuff envelopes.
I volunteered there for a year and a half. Talking to people around me was such a great relief. Since then, I've done many things to show there's life after cancer. I love to knit and weave. One day my accountant said, Anju, have you ever thought about knitting hats? Now I have a group of 6 or 7 friends who meet every month to knit hats for the newborns at the NICU. My husband delivers them to the hospital. Pramod and I have also been working closely with the Dean of Hendricks Chapel. Now we're advisors to the Hindu student group at SU. At first, Pramod was reluctant, but I said, no, let's try it. About 50 students showed up for the first event. I said, God is opening another door for us. The first couple of times, they called me Mrs. Varshney. Now they call me Anju Auntie, and we do pujas together.
When I found out I had breast cancer, I got up in church. I told the whole church I needed their prayers. A lady gave me the numbers of 2 breast cancer survivors to call. Benita was in Marshall's shopping, but she talked to me for a whole hour. After, I called Claudia. They wanted to meet me. 6 African-American women were sitting in Benita's dining room with food and everything to support me on my journey. I knew everything would be okay. We kept on meeting. Later, we went for dinner one Christmas and decided Syracuse needs us. Not many people understand what women of color actually go through. With family issues, husband issues, children issues, and work issues, the one-parent homes, we called ourselves Shades of Inspiration because we looked around and we were all different shades. I'm the vice president. Now, Shades is very much known throughout the city. We have our own annual walk and fancy gala. When someone comes in, we'll sit down with them and say,
What can we do for you?
I was one of those people that always donated their change to breast cancer awareness at the cash register. I knew nothing about cancer until I got it. When I started doing the research, I realized that I had wasted hundreds of dollars putting my quarters in these little bins. None of this was going to save my life. My body's been amputated. My head's been cut open, drilled into, steel plates put in. There's absolutely nothing pink about it. It's black. Growing up, I was a huge follower of Ryan White. People were scared of him because he got AIDS through a blood transfusion in high school. I identified with his fight. I'll never forget how I cried in 1990 when he died. I'm surprised how scared the world is of a disease. People consider AIDS a chronic illness now because of the stigma is not the same and the new drugs that let you live longer. Magic Johnson has lived for over 20 years. 116 people die a day of metastatic breast cancer in the United States. During the AIDS epidemic, ACT UP said, ACT UP, fight back, stop AIDS. Maybe I'm going to be the ACT UP of breast cancer.
Breast cancer happens to a person out of the blue. Oh my God, it's suddenly appointment after appointment after appointment. They're getting fragments of information. Upstate started a multidisciplinary program where we all sat in the same room. The surgeon, the radiation doctor, the plastic surgeon, pathologist. And we talked about each of our roles in caring for patients. People need to have one cohesive story so they can make their decisions. That was one of the things I liked the best.
Cancer has given me so many wonderful gifts. I was already running Coleman Race for the Cure before my first diagnosis because I thought it was a worthy cause. In 2004, I was selected as the National Susan G. Coleman Award winner because of my volunteerism and my running. Oh my gosh, they flew me to Denver. I was also inducted into the National Distance Running Hall of Fame in Utica. How many people can say they have run with Olympians? If you're not living life large, maybe you want to switch it up.
Once in the operating room, the surgeon wanted to make a big, huge incision. I said, no, this is a young woman. This is not what we talked about. He said, well, it's going to make it easier for me to do the mastectomy. I said, don't even think about it. He was pissed, but he did what I told him to do. I think you have to be able to stand up and say, look, you can't do it that way.
The breast surgeon says,
I want to make sure I can get all the breast tissue out. I want to get a completely clean situation.
The oncologist says,
I don't really care that much about what the incision looks like or what the reconstruction looks like. I want to make sure that I treat this patient so she doesn't have a recurrence.
The plastic surgeon says,
I want to make sure that I can give this patient the best aesthetic outcome so that maybe how she looks is not such a reminder.
I think about dying all the time. I realize I didn't say I love you enough to Judy. I should have said it every day. She knew it, of course, but it's different when you hear it. So I'm much more expressive with my children now. And I'm reconnecting with friends. Sometimes after 10 or 20 years, I just say, I want to see you.
I used to dance before I got married. Pramod is the one who encouraged me to start dancing again just a couple of years ago. His colleague's wife, Seema Kumar, practices Kathak, which I also had learned. Seema is an amazing dancer, but she was hesitant to start teaching. Finally, she gave in. I have been her student ever since. She has now started classes for different age groups. I'm the oldest student, actually. It's a very vigorous North Indian classical dance, and I love it. Learning dance was a huge adjustment for me because in the classroom, I was in charge. I knew what I was doing there. Now I have to keep my mouth shut and follow the instructions. Seema said, Anjuji, would it be okay if I said you're a grandmother? I said, I'd love it. I'm not ashamed that I'm a grandmother. Actually, I'm proud of that. After all this time, I can dance again.
Growing up in the Bronx, I sang in the choir. A musician who played at our church was from Syracuse originally. When I first got here, someone said,
there's this musician at Bethany. Oh my God, he is awesome. You should come to church. His name is Frank.
I was like, Frank Jones by any chance?
Yes, that's him.
The next Sunday, I walked into Bethany Baptist Church and sat right in front of him. I have been singing ever since. I've had some good days. I've had some hills to climb. I've had some weary days and some sleepless nights. That hymn is called I Won't Complain. It's my favorite. When I sing, it reminds me there is a power greater than myself. That's my way of saying, God, thank you. Just thank you for bringing me through each and everything I've gone through. I told you, I was supposed to get cancer. I was supposed to come to Syracuse.
The estimated lifespan for stage 4 is 2 to 5 years. I'm at 3.5 years, knock on wood. The doctors don't see any signs of it right now. People who know me know that I laugh about cancer. When I went to the cemetery with my new boyfriend, Jason, to see my grandmother this summer, there was a fresh dug hole. I wish I had gotten a picture with 1 foot in the grave. People say to me,
You're dying.
I always say, I may have cancer, but cancer does not have me. Not today, cancer. Not today.
I always encouraged my patients to get a second opinion. I always reassured them that we're able to communicate all the time with the biggest cancer centers, Sloan Kettering, Dana-Farber, Roswell. We know exactly what they do. Our drugs are the same. Nursing care will be as good at upstate as at Sloan Kettering. It might even be easier to get treated locally. The only difference is when there's a drug that isn't FDA approved yet. And you're at the point in your journey where there's no standard treatment and you want to pursue something experimental. Many of us have always had the idea that Syracuse is the right size city for medicine. It's big enough to have diverse treatment options, but it's small enough to know the major players. It's like we've found the sweet spot, if that makes sense.
I'm a different person since I retired in 2003. Listen, I was a closeted educator in a small conservative town. I had heard of Sage Upstate through small gatherings, but I didn't go through those doors. But after I retired, I became very actively involved. Older LGBT people are more likely to be isolated and not have family support or kids. Sage has been in Syracuse for about 22 years. We serve a couple hundred people a month across 3 counties. 3 years ago, I started a falls prevention class. I've watched people get stronger and more confident. I was nervous when I was writing lesson plans for that first exercise class, when I realized, once a teacher, always a teacher. These are my friends. What a complete 360 now. Here I am, an out lesbian teaching LGBTQ seniors, having a wonderful time.
My ideal is to have a woman who has gone through breast cancer want to look in the mirror after taking her clothes off. I can't erase the whole disease, but if I can help someone be a little more comfortable, I want to. Short of having your face taken off, I don't think anything compares to losing your sense of what society defines as femininity.
People look upon PTSD as something a vet gets, not just anyone who's gone through a traumatic experience. We had a part of us amputated, literally cut off of us. It's exactly like someone back from a war zone. I used to have weird panic attacks, but no one ever came to me and said, you should see a therapist. I had a panic attack every single time the radiation machine was over me. This is going to fall on me. I'm the only one in this room. It's going to crush me. I'm going to die from this thing. And the radiologist just replied, it's not. I live with depression. On my 6-year cancer anniversary, my oncologist graduated me from regular checkups. I was scared. Who was watching over me now? I still had very dark thoughts. My friends were dying. They're still dying. I'm not, though I face death. Death has been right in front of me, like I almost had it. Then I came back to life, resurrected. I wonder why I haven't died from it.
It's survivor's guilt.
This past year, sometimes I thought, if I die today, I'm good. Then I realized, that's a problem. Yes, that scares me a lot. When I go to the doctor, I think, here we go, this is gonna be it. I'm not nervous about it, I'm just waiting for it. You know that essay my son Ben wrote for Marie Claire magazine? It ended with,
she's still my strong, taller than you look regular mom. She slowly got better, louder each day. Cancer made us stronger. We can defeat anything now.
I am Anne Marie Giannino Otis. Stupid, dumb breast cancer is why we must talk. We must grab each other's hands and pull each other up.
I am Sam Gruber. The cancer was a curse. Judy and I loved each other. This is my story to tell.
I am Anthony DeBoni. Breast reconstruction is a woman's right if she wants it. I can't erase the whole disease, but if I can help someone be a little more comfortable, I want to.
I am Barbara Genton. I got my third breast cancer diagnosis in 2013. If you're not living life large today, maybe you want to switch it up.
I am Sheila Lemke. It wasn't my first choice to specialize in breast cancer treatment, but it became a true love.
I am Colleen Anderson. I am a 43-year-old, and I don't want to die. Not today, cancer. Not today.
I am Deirdre Bordes. I was supposed to come to Syracuse. I was supposed to get cancer. I'll tell anybody about my breast cancer.
I'm Anju Varshney. Just that word.
Cancer.
Life happens. Keep smiling. Namaste.
You've been listening to Titbits, Breast Cancer Stories, a project by SU television, radio, and film professor Tula Guenca. Titbits was written by Syracuse University alumna Nancy Keefe Rhodes with Kyle Bass of Syracuse Stage.
Titbits is part of a larger project examining the impact of breast cancer that includes the Look Now photo exhibit. You can find out more at looknowproject.org. For Syracuse Speaks, I'm Katie Zolkowski.
And I'm Chris Bolt. To learn more about the project and other breast cancer coverage, go to our website, waer.org, and search breast cancer. Thanks for listening. This is 88.3 FM WAER Syracuse, your local NPR station from Syracuse University.